Good afternoon and welcome to What's New. Let me restart that. To building .NET apps for devices and services. Sorry, I still have memories from yesterday's session. Can I please see a show of hands of folks in the audience who today have a WPF or Windows Form application? I would say that is well over 75 to 80% of the audience, and I'm hoping then this talk would be very relevant to what you're trying to do today and what you'll plan to do going forward. I get lots and lots of questions around, I have this existing WPF app or Windows Forms app, and Microsoft talks a lot about devices and services. Help me understand how that fits in with the overall direction, and also help me understand what are some of the strategies for moving and also augmenting existing applications with apps for devices and services. So to provide a backdrop for today's presentation, and I know some of you have already seen me flail around with Kinect. You can't get more modern or device-centric than Kinect. So what I'd like to do is show you a Kinect-based application which actually started as a WPF application. I'm going to paint the storyline as I present to you today of how I went from a rich UI WPF application to something now that allows me to actually interact with my application through Kinect. So let me remove the veil, and hopefully the flailing. As you can clearly see, this is a Windows Store application. And the idea behind this application is the conference organizers basically have an existing LOB application. It's written in WPF. And today, a number of the talks today are being presented live. And the next step is to improve the application so that users can interact with the presenter in a rich and meaningful way. So what you see me doing right now is it's a WPF application that is taking the feed from Kinect, and then what is happening is it's serving that feed up to this Windows Store application. And so that WPF application is interacting with a C++ component that is getting that feed. So through this application, the idea would be that you in the audience can have a, let's say, a Surface or a Windows phone, and you can interact with me. The things that you can do, for example, is obviously you can see my interactions, but using your device, as I start to flail around, you can do things like change the camera angle. So if you want to view me from different sides of where I'm currently standing, you can do that. The other thing that you can do is the organizers are very keen to provide real-time evaluations. So let me go ahead and change the camera angle. So what they want to do is provide the ability to assess live. So if you don't like this presentation, throughout the presentation, what you could do is throw tomatoes at me, and I would get the actual number of times that people threw tomatoes at me. I would see that on my dashboard as a presenter, and hopefully I would try and improve as I'm presenting. Or if you're very impressed with what's going on, you can actually throw flyouts. So, but the point that I'm trying to present here is I did not rewrite my existing WPF application. What I did was I basically reused the existing code. I used the existing set of components and DLLs, and I basically augmented my application so that the audience can now interact with the same application. So let's now go through that journey a little bit, and I'm going to switch to my PowerPoint.
But the point that I'm trying to present here is
I want to start off by setting the frame for this conversation. So, you know, applications are evolving from being apps, in my humble opinion, to experiences. It used to be that 5 years ago, I would say, I'm going to go home, open up my browser, type in www.netflix.com and start watching a movie. Now, as I'm having a coffee with someone, and they mention, for example, Breaking Bad, which is a TV series, by the way, great TV series, and someone... And I haven't seen it yet. I'll just add it to my queue via my phone.
I start
watching it on the bus on my tablet. So, I go home, fire up my Xbox, and I continue watching the movie. Right? So there isn't really, in my opinion, a single application anymore. It's an end-to-end experience that we as developers need to think about every time we want to enable a new experience or a new scenario. Can I see a show of hands, folks who are now trying to target multiple devices today? Show of hands. Okay. And I imagine it is not just Microsoft devices, correct? I imagine there's iOS as well as Android as well. So it's the de facto way of doing things going forward. And the reason why I say that is I actually believe the definition of what an app is changing. And this is crucial to our conversation today. In the 80s and 90s, an app used to be an eggs on a machine, right? What happened in the first decade of 2000, an app is an eggs on a machine and a website. Now when you speak to someone about what is an app, it truly is an ecosystem of experiences. So it could be something running on your phone, on your tablet, on your PC, on your Xbox, in your car. It could be a gamut of things, right? So you can imagine, how do you go about keeping up with all these new form factors and devices as you go forward? In my humble opinion, there will be a time where that may not be tenable. It's just the proliferation is just gigantic. So let's talk about the scenario where you have an existing asset today, whether if it's WPF or Windows Forms. And we talk a lot about this application modernization, modernize your applications. And I want to talk to you a little bit about what that actually means. So clearly, this is a very obvious slide, but development targets are evolving. We used to all have beige or black PCs on our desks. Ginormous 15-inch, 17-inch, 20-inch CRT screens. And that is fundamentally changing where everything is now touch enabled. And the screens, as you saw from the first day keynote, are massive, right? So you have this huge breadth of devices that you're trying to reach with your users, with your customers. Obviously with phones, feature phones used to be the name of the game. Now, smartphones are really, you know, I would say, especially in the Western world, smartphones are the way that people are consuming data on the road and when they're highly mobile. And last but not least, let's talk about the server piece, where in the past and to a large extent still, folks are writing applications that run on servers or interact with servers, and now with the cloud, you have both a public cloud as well as a potentially a hybrid cloud where you can host your applications either on-prem or in the cloud. So that is the landscape that all developers are trying to deal with. And I imagine every one of you today in the audience is trying to grapple with this same set of problems, right?
In the past and to a large extent still.
So, while the targets are also changing, application patterns are changing. So, we're going from client-server, which are the established patterns, to now devices. And I really want to make it clear here that, you know, when I say devices, it is the entire device ecosystem. So it isn't just Microsoft, but it's also Android and iOS and the other platforms as well. And it's also a set of services that are not just Microsoft services, but set of services across the board as well. So the development targets are changing. The application patterns are evolving. So the question is, you as developers are now essentially are not stuck, but you have to deal with this set of complexities that are coming about. So this is meant to be a roadmap of how do you think about your application going forward. So if you have today a web application, which primarily was a web PC form factor, the way we think about it now is essentially a web tablet form factors, right? That's how we think about the kind of evolution of the web PC form factor. Today, when we talk about native applications, and when I say native, I do not just mean native C++ application, I mean applications that run natively on the machine. We think about not only desktop, but also Windows Store, Windows Phone, as well as non-Microsoft applications. And that, last but not least, on-prem is either now on-prem, hybrid cloud, or the public cloud proper. So when we talk about the modernization of .NET applications, I want to be very clear, this is what we're referring to. We are not talking about throw away your existing investments and rewrite your applications. In my humble opinion, that might have been tenable in the past, where essentially, the PC form factor was the only form factor, and therefore you knew exactly, you either had an x86 or an x64 architecture to deal with pretty much the same dimension screens. That is fundamentally changing, and in my opinion, having to rewrite the application every time there's a new form factor is just simply untenable. Now, the one thing I can promise you is two trends are fundamentally disrupting our industry. Devices will continue to proliferate. I cannot tell you right now what devices will look like in 3 years, but I can tell you we will see things that we cannot imagine today. So, in the keynote as well as in the hallway, you've probably seen a few 3D printers, right? The device movement is for real. It isn't a fad, and what you're going to be seeing are things like Xbox One, and what you see in the middle is a MakerBot. And on your right-hand side, for those of you who hang out and are device geeks like me and hang out on Kickstarter, you'll notice that is an Oculus Rift, which is a virtual reality headset that is priced at $300 or less. Two or 3 years ago, in my opinion, that was unimaginable, right? And they have Unity integration, and you'll be able to write applications now that have full virtual reality capability. And rather than your customer spending $10,000 on a VR headset, they'll spend $250, $300. So this movement will just continue and will absolutely blow up in every single form, right? And I just cannot imagine how people will be able to kind of rewrite the code for every thing that's going to come out. The other thing I want to emphasize is that the cloud movement is just beginning. We have not even seen the start, in my humble opinion, of how the cloud will actually disrupt the industry. When I talk to the majority of our enterprise customers, regardless of whether if it's Fortune 500 companies or all the way down to more of a mom and pop shop where they're perhaps creating a small accounting software package, as well as large ISVs, most of them are still thinking about what does it mean for me to move to the cloud? What does it mean for my existing investments? And I hope I'll clarify some of that going forward. Okay. I spent the last 10 minutes framing the conversation that I want to have today, and it's because ultimately, in my opinion, these are every developer's expectations, and that's how I think about the problem. If you think about the device proliferation and the cloud disrupting pretty much every single thing that's out there, it is expected that developers should be able to reuse the existing source code and across devices. The other thing I think developers will get to expect more and more of going forward is a new device does not constitute a reset. Just because there's a new device doesn't mean you throw away everything that you have and then rewrite again. And guess what? 9 months from now, there's another device. And then 6 months after that, there's another device. And what will happen is ultimately, code will get stuck in time, per se, because the pace is just is way, way too fast. So I think we have to approach the problem from a fundamentally different way, where writing code to be portable and reusable is the way to think about the problem, because it is no longer the case that you can easily, or with a pretty high certainty, imagine what the future is going to look like even 3 years from now. Because if anyone tells you what the future looks like 3 years from now in this industry, I would say you need to question that. So, all right. The crash that you were seeing, for those of you who came here early, was I actually wanted to show you the start of this demo. But that's okay. We're a few minutes in, but let me start from that. As I said, the examples I'm going to walk through today is a conference organizer, and they basically have a line of business application that allows them to manage conferences. So a conference just like this. It's a very rich WPF application. There's lots of controls that you can refresh, see what's going on live as people are evaluating sessions, as the press is providing feedback, and so on and so forth. And it's a very classic thing. It's rich UI with on-prem database. And the question is, now I want to move this forward. What does that actually mean? If you remember early on, I talked about, you know, the definition of, in my opinion, app changing to experience. And this is what I mean about the experience continuum, right? It is not the case, in my opinion, that you should abandon your existing assets, such as in WPF or Windows Forms. It is all about looking at the workload, looking at the experience that you want to provide for your customers, and going with that. So let me go through this example really quickly. So obviously we have desktop, which is a very rich WPF application. And then we have the tablet. This is where you want to provide mobility. And as you saw, this is where I had written a Windows Store application that would interact with my WPF application through Kinect, right? And if you want to go ultra mobile, this is the exact same application with lots of source code being shared on my phone as well. And then if you want to have reach, remember I talked about reach on the desktop and reach on the web, things like single page applications are extremely popular now that you can then go and write for. And then last but not least, NUI. In my opinion, NUI is another big disruption that's going to continue to evolve. Touch is obviously already there, as you saw, gestures. And I think one of the sleepers right now is voice, in my opinion. It's somewhat still distant, but there's a tremendous amount of good stuff happening, both in research as well as the engineering departments that, in my opinion, will really start to change the way people interact with the application. So now you have to think about, how do I add voice? How do I add gestures? How do I have it? It's a lot of functionality that you have to add. And if you have not written your application with portability in mind, this is where you're going to essentially start to pay the taxes. Because the tax man cometh, whether you like it or not. And the thing that is the connective tissue right there is the cloud, ultimately. And everything in the future will go to the cloud, regardless of whether it's a hybrid cloud or it's just the public cloud proper. Okay. Now let's talk about .NET and within the context of the conversation that we just had. .NET is truly part of the fabric of every single Microsoft platform. So we have .NET redistributables. So as I mentioned yesterday in my talk, for those of you who were there, we just announced .NET 4.5.1 preview. That is going to be a redistributable that was going to be available via Windows Update. That means sometime in the future, hundreds of millions of machines will have .NET 4.5.1 installed on them going forward. And so the fact that we want to continue to add value to existing applications, that will not diminish. I think that will continue. With Windows Phone, with Silverlight Windows, I mean, every single platform that you look at, .NET is a core component, and our commitment to .NET will continue as these platforms evolve themselves, right? Just think about it. Windows Mobile 6.5, Windows Phone is very different than what 6.5 was, but we continue to evolve as these platforms move forward. I briefly touched base on this in my presentation today, but I want to use this now to clarify how I think about the reuse problem. When I think of .NET, there are essentially four core components. There is the core runtime, there's a sort of libraries on top of the runtime, there are essentially sort of languages that then you target those libraries or APIs with, and then there's tools such as Visual Studio that will basically allow you to write applications. I would say the pain point that most folks grapple with is that, you know, the runtime, it's I would say, a very stable platform. You know, things improve over time, performance gets better, security gets better, reliability gets better, but ultimately it's a very stable foundation. Languages, you know, folks like Anders Hasberg and co. continue to make great strides in improving our managed languages forward. And in tools, hopefully you saw the latest and greatest as far as things like async debugging and managed return values and so forth are concerned. What about libraries? And with libraries, the one thing I really want to clarify is libraries provide both general and platform-specific capabilities. And I'm going to dig into that a little bit later. Okay. Can I please see a show of hands? Who here identifies with this image? And let me describe to you what this image is. This image is I want to target the various platforms or devices that Microsoft provides. And therefore, what I've done is for every one of those, I've created a different project, right? And now I have to figure out how do I deploy, manage, service every one of those projects. Can I please see a show of hands? Okay. And for us, when we think about how do we help fix this problem of project proliferation, we think about portable class libraries, which was introduced in .NET 4.5. With portable class libraries, for those of you who have not used portable class libraries, it's one source, one project, one binary, multiple platforms. And so the idea here is that you are no longer creating, and if you remember I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, all these devices coming up, you're no longer creating and rewriting your code for every single one of those devices. You will, through PCL, refactor your code such that the core components, such as your model and your model view, are pretty much kept consistent, and it's only the view that's changing over time. Okay, so when it comes to portable class libraries, one of the key questions that we get is, where can I use it and where? So with portable class libraries, the idea is that we want to basically abstract the things that are, I would say, abstractable. What I mean by that is things that are not platform specific, and I give you a very simple example here. Sensors on devices. Sensors on devices are very platform specific. So typically you cannot abstract that away in something like a PCL because each platform has a different set of sensors. For example, the way you interact with Xbox through the controller is very different than the way that you interact, for example, with Xbox through your Surface, right? Very, very different. But the idea is, where it makes sense, we have basically allowed all of the functionality of .NET to be captured in portable class libraries. And you'll see in a second how, through NuGet, now you can have all these benefits as well. So how does portable class libraries fit within the development approach? Can I please see a show of hands? Is anyone today using the MVVM model? Wonderful. I am extremely happy about that. And the reason is that is our recommended way of code reuse, regardless of whether you're writing a desktop application, whether you're writing a Windows Phone application or Windows Store application. Just very briefly, for those in the audience who haven't had a chance to interact with or use MVVM, the idea is you basically have models. These are essentially your data objects, your business logics. And these things are very portable. Your view models are, it's essentially, I would say, the eventing system and what information to display and the flow of interaction. And then last but not least are the views, is how do you display your UI. And on WPF, that is all in XAML, for example, right? In Windows Phone, that is different. Also, in Windows 8 and 8.1, that is also XAML. So the way it basically works is that the view model references the model, and then the view basically data binds to the view model. And in this architecture, the view has no idea what the model looks like, and vice versa. The model has no idea what the view looks like. And that makes a tremendous amount of sense. And the reason being is that what you can do through this abstraction is have your view pieces be platform specific, and then have the core of your application, which is both your view model as well as your model, be the portable piece of your application. And now I'm going to talk about how PCL fits into this entire strategy. Okay. So what does a cross-platform architecture look like when it comes to PCL? So what you see on your left-hand side is a Windows Store app. What you see on the right-hand side is a Windows Phone application. And then on the bottom is a portable class library. And let me walk through each one of these boxes quickly so that the MVVM model makes sense in the context of portable class libraries and how you can use them. So if you have any bootstrapping code that is specific to how the application behaves on that specific platform, as well as your views, that is clearly device or specific. So those are captured by your projects that specifically target those platforms. And then what you want to do is, in the portable class libraries, this is essentially both your view model as well as your model are abstracted inside your portable library. And in Solution Explorer, you simply reference the exact same portable class library from both your Windows Store application, your WPF application, as well as your Windows Phone Windows Phone application. And what that does is, now you're basically in the PCL left with one thing, which is your platform functionality abstraction. So a great example here would be perhaps file access. File access, for those who have already experienced it, is different on Windows RT, as it is different on Windows Phone, as it is different on a .NET Framework desktop proper. So that needs to be abstracted away by the portable class library such that it doesn't matter where you move the portable class library, it continues to work in a proper way. But the nice model here is that as long as that abstraction is made, your Windows Store applications, the views, as well as the startup code and the bootstrapping are completely unaware, for example, how the file was provisioned. Right? When you, for example, say open file, and then opens up the open file dialog, that is completely handled by the portable class library as opposed to your view being in any way tainted with knowing what is going on at the file level, which you don't want. Because as soon as, and this is a really important point to remember, as soon as you start to bleed that functionality the platform-specific functionality into your view, that is where you run into problems, because you now have to literally rewrite your code every single time you are targeting a different platform. Let me quickly switch over and show you what that actually looks like in the solution that I was showing you. And this is a real-world example.
Thing that's out there. It is expected that developers should be able to reuse the existing.
And you can go as well. Okay, I'm going to open up. It's already open. Wonderful. So let's start with this. This is my portable class library. As you can see, it doesn't look any different in Solution Explorer. But the one thing that you notice is when I go to properties, the property pages look pretty different than normal. And this is where you can now choose the target framework that you want your portable class library to target. So clearly, here we're saying we want this PCL to target 4.5 and higher, Windows Store apps 8 and higher. By the way, I am using Visual Studio 2013 preview, so this will look a little bit different on Visual Studio 2012, Silverlight 5, as well as Windows Phone 8. And what this looks like from a application perspective is I'm going to pull up now my dependencies. There we go, project dependencies. And look at this. So if I look at my Windows Store application, I can clearly see that it references the portable class library. I look at the Windows Phone application that also accesses the portable class library. And then last but not least, I look at the WPF application. It also uses the exact same code across every one of these platforms. So it's trivial now to simply change your view, change your presentation layer, and keep the core of your business logic and your data access layer. Now, the other thing that I wanted to highlight here is that if you have platform-specific functionality, I used sensors as one example. If you're accessing things like sensors, it's important that you do that in the, as part of the project that you're targeting the actual platform with. So in this case, this would not be part of the portable class library. Again, as I mentioned, if that happens to bleed through, you basically poison your portability strategy to a point where you don't have to do if-defs and rewrite your code as you target different platforms. Okay, I've talked a lot about the client part of essentially .NET applications. What does the server side look like? I'm going to touch on this briefly. There's a lot more detail that I'm going to provide you links with, but let me actually touch base on that. So the strategy as far as the cloud piece is concerned is by using the Azure App Fabric, and this is where you can now essentially, by following a pub/sub model, you can push events into essentially a queue, and this is the queue here, and then depending on the actual subscribers themselves, this subscription will either, you know, in this case, target subscriber 1 or 2. As far as how you target the Azure Fabric, for this example that I'm going to essentially show you the link for in a second, I have written another portable class library that basically talks to the service bus. Again, provides abstractions. So that what it looks like here is, it's actually one of our team members. His name's Dave. He's written an application that is basically a don't forget the groceries list application that when his wife, for example, asks Dave to add ice cream to his shopping list, Dave can basically receive the notification on his device through the Azure App Fabric, which is then accessed through the service bus portable class library that was written also. Now, one thing I mentioned at the beginning was this continuum of experiences. And so another way to express that is this continuous client, where as you go from device to device to device, you provide this great experience across the cloud. And we have a, in my opinion, a great MSDN article that we've written of how do you actually go about writing this application that runs on multiple devices and talks to the Azure Fabric and then be able to basically push notifications as well as be able to pop notifications as well across the various subscribers. Okay. So let's quickly look at what we've talked about so far. We've talked about using portable libraries to share code across the different platforms. And essentially, the way we think about this is using the MVVM model, which fits in beautifully with the portable class libraries. I mean, I would say it's the perfect marriage of using portable class libraries with the MVVM model. And for those of you who have not used MVVM, it's actually, you know, the name sounds somewhat complex, but the actual concept is extremely simple. And if you haven't looked at it yet, I would highly encourage you to go and look at the MVVM model. And then I would say the portable class library strategy makes perfect sense and how you use it in the, with the MVVM model. As I mentioned, it's the way you use portable class libraries in the MVVM model is to basically put both the models and the view models in your portable class libraries. And then, as far as your platform-specific views are concerned, these are essentially your UI, your presentation layer, they would go in your view. And if you saw what happens then from Visual Studio, I would essentially reference my portable class library from each of those platforms. And then for the non-portable functionality, as I said, things like file access, you basically create abstractions for the non-portable part. And then you have to target the abstractions per platform. This is where you know things like on Windows runtime where isolated storage is being used instead of the system.io.file, you'd have to write platform-specific code to understand what that actually means on Windows proper versus, let's say, Windows Store versus Windows Phone. And the reason, personally, why I think this makes a lot of sense, because it dovetails so nicely with our strategy around NuGet packages. When you think about it for a second, our team, the .NET team, has a very, very similar problem, right? We also produce libraries. We also need to target various platforms. So we certainly cannot be in the same kind of dilemma that I mentioned before, where as all these devices come online in the next years, we have to kind of rewrite and maintain across now, you know, who knows, 20, 30, 40 different devices going forward. So our strategy for essentially releasing portable class libraries is NuGet. For those of you who haven't used NuGet yet, it's essentially the package manager inside Visual Studio. It's a fully supported platform inside Visual Studio. We have a whole team working on NuGet. And as I said, it's completely integrated within Visual Studio. And so we released system composition as well as TPL data flow with around when .NET 4.5 released. What we've also done since then are things like HTTP client, async and so forth are now available on NuGet. I really want to make a very important point here. By us being able to essentially release these libraries on NuGet, what it means is you no longer have to wait for the next version of big release of .NET framework to be able to use the same functionality. For example, for some of the libraries that we released, you can actually now target these libraries from within Visual Studio 2010 and Visual Studio 2012. Because when you think about it, these are simply libraries. There is no strong binding to the runtime here that prevents us from shipping these independently. So you get this exact same goodness regardless of whether you're using Visual Studio 2010, 2012, and obviously 2013 preview as well. So when I kind of step back and think about the strategy that we are following, which is allowing essentially our customers to use NuGet packages and the portable class libraries to not only target the latest and greatest runtimes, but also be able to target platforms and runtimes that already exist out in the wild. For those of you who were there yesterday, I made this announcement yesterday that now we have the .NET Framework NuGet packages. So all the discussions that I've been having around portable class libraries and so forth, you can now access that through Visual Studio via a dedicated, curated channel that is 100% supported, maintained by Microsoft, where you can now get the same benefits of portable class libraries, regardless of whether you have Visual Studio 2012 today, Visual Studio 2010, or 13 for that matter. And one thing I'd like to briefly touch base on is the fact that we now publish three different sets of packages in a central location. Depending on, and we clearly also say, you know, what the description is and also how many downloads have happened so far. So we have the first category is what are our set of stable packages. Then the second category is pre-release packages. And I really, really encourage you, if you are looking for functionality where it is provided through the pre-release package, or you'd like us to look at a library or a set of APIs that .NET doesn't exist yet, the pre-release package is a great way to provide that feedback. So, for example, and you'll actually, if you go to this website, you'll actually see the interaction happening in real time. For example, as we release the latest and greatest version of, let's say, package X, you can go online, download it, evaluate it right then and there without having to download the entire .NET framework, tell us whether it meets your needs or not, and then we will basically take that feedback real time, right? And then since we don't have to wait for the next big release of .NET, which in the past has been, you know, every 3 years roughly, we can provide that quick turnaround and then be able to solve your problem. And through that, essentially the graduation phase is the pre-release package, which obviously includes portable class libraries, then graduates to a release package. But what I'm also really excited is that, you know, Microsoft isn't the only company that is providing these packages. Through our official channels, we are now also fully supporting these packages that are provided by third libraries. So, and one of the things that you'll notice is these packages were actually designed with portability and cross-platforms in mind. So by us supporting it, we will make it that much easier for you, hopefully, to simply go ahead and say, you know what, this is a package that's fully supported by Microsoft, even though it's provided by a third party. These packages are already built in a way that they're portable and allow me to target cross-platform. In fact, some of these packages, I'm sure many of you have already perhaps used them, they don't just target Microsoft platforms, right? They target Android and iOS and so on and so forth. So when I think about the strategy around building .NET devices and services that span multiple devices, it's a great way to get them that much faster, right? Because as us and our partners basically release these packages and the portable class libraries, it's so much easier to essentially reuse code without having to rewrite the thing on let's say, Windows Phone and Android and iOS and so forth. So personally, I am very, very excited about the ability to for us to provide a dedicated and supported channel in Visual Studio. And what I want to do very briefly, this is the 2013 preview experience. You can simply, if my mouse cooperates, right-click on the solution, and then, again, if my mouse actually, there we go. You can click on that. This is the channel for essentially all the packages, and if I just wanted the .NET framework packages, sorry, these are all the updates. So if there were any updates and online, I can just get the ones that are currently stable. Again, jQuery, this is one of our supported packages that are online. But also, you can not only get the stable ones only, but if you really want to evaluate a pre-release package, you can do it right through Visual Studio without having to wait, and provide us with feedback in real time. Okay, I have a, I would say, somewhat exciting announcement to make, and which I believe either happened last night or the night before, is that we have somewhat completely revamped our, if you go to microsoft.com/net, our website, and we've now published a brand new set of guidelines of how do you write applications for both devices and services, and how do you move your existing investments forward? What we've done in this white paper is we have provided a clear roadmap for multiple scenarios. And I, in fact, you know what I might do? Let me see if I have that white paper available on this machine. Maybe I. This is all extended, okay. There we are. And I was told it's around a 70-page document, and let me just briefly go through, but it basically talks about exactly how do you go about moving your application forward. So here's a diagram in my mind that clearly captures and articulates most of the discussion that we had this morning. So if you would like to continue this discussion and really find out in much, much more depth online exactly how do you move your existing application forward and be able to target devices and services with .NET, this is a great 70-page white paper, and I warn you, it's going to take some serious reading. To get through it, but it will provide, in my opinion, a wonderful roadmap of how you think about writing .NET applications for devices and services and moving your existing investments forward. Okay, so with that, what I'd like to do is wrap up this discussion, but I really would like this to be the start of our conversation. What we've done just very, I would say, recently is that we've really consolidated our feedback mechanism such that we have six clear channels, essentially, of how we collect feedback. So depending on how you'd like to provide us with feedback, we have a blog where you're going to be able to see all the information that we present today. You can directly email us. In fact, myself and a number of members of my team are on that alias. MSDN forums, we've consolidated all of the MSDN forums such that it doesn't matter what part of .NET you're interested in. Let's say it's WPF, WF, WCF. It is all consolidated right now. We have presence on Facebook, Twitter, as well as User Voice. We pay a tremendous amount of attention to things like User Voice. So if you'd like to suggest a feature or you'd like to provide feedback on a particular capability or an experience, this is a great, great way to interact with us moving forward. Okay, what I'd like to do is in the last 6 or 7 minutes, I'd like to open up for any questions and things that I missed in my conversation. Yes, please.
Yes,
So the question was, do we have portable class libraries for Android and iOS? Some of you may all be aware of one of our partners, Xamarin. Xamarin, in fact, is we are collaborating with them on essentially providing PCL on both Android and iOS. And they have frameworks such as MonoTouch that allows you to target those exactly. So I would say we as Microsoft, do not produce those portable class libraries, but we collaborate with folks like Xamarin to make it happen. I'm sorry? That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, but I can go and find out. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead. So great question. Is the source code going to be available? The answer is absolutely yes. In fact, this is one of the common questions that I get is people love to understand how you interact with Kinect, for example, through C#. All that source code, I'm going to publish it on our official blog, both the various clients, the portable class library, the Kinect library, all that information I will publish online. So if you want to follow some of the patterns, such as around NUI, connecting with devices and so forth, that I'm going to make that all available online. Yes. I want to warn you, it's around 32 projects or something like that, so it's a pretty big beast. Go ahead. That's a great question. So the question was, how are essentially the bits that are on NuGet, so let's say download a package, those go with your application. So they're essentially app local, right? It isn't, and this is one thing I really want to point out, is that's a key distinction where we do not, when you download a NuGet package and then you install it on a user's machine, we don't go and update the entire machine with that package, right? That's app local. It only impacts that application such that you, for example, let's say you're evaluating a pre-release package. We don't want to impact the entire machine so that suddenly other applications start to break. So all that is app local.
So it may happen that if I have five installed applications, they will have five copies of the same library.
Correct. Yes. Or you can have different versions if you like, depending on what you're trying to do. So if you have essentially different versions of the application targeting different versions of the NuGet packages, you can have that as well. Question.
So with the libraries now being delivered by NuGet, is the intent, or I guess you could read into that the .NET framework itself is going to be shrinking in size, so that only those common core libraries are going to be .NET, and you kind of just add on?
That is a great, great question. Let me, I'm going to bring up one slide here that I think makes hopefully great sense in the context. When we talk to our customers, they really, really would like us to keep the runtime stable. Like, don't touch it. We love, what you guys are doing with JIT and reflection, all that stuff. Don't touch that. However, with the libraries, we found is that we have very large enterprises that love the way their libraries are. They do not want anyone to touch the libraries. In fact, they have an app lifecycle policy that lasts for 15 years or something like that. But also we have the other spectrum where folks really want the latest update and greatest. So what you'll see happen is, I would say, features that have a very strong tie to runtime, like, string, right? In my opinion, it never makes sense to release that as a separate package. I mean, that's just part of the actual being or DNA of .NET. But libraries that evolve much, much faster, and as you saw, we have a number of those. I would say the trend's going to be that those are going to be released on a much faster cadence. However, there will be, essentially, I would say, releases where the entire thing kind of comes together going forward. But the one thing I want to stress is that we want to make this an opt-in model, right? So if you like your framework stable and exactly as it is, you can basically keep it as is. Or if you want to opt in and get the latest and greatest and additional libraries, right? So you'll have essentially going forward, someone might decide not to opt in any of the brand new libraries, in which case they'll just have the exact framework as is. But some of the features will essentially live in now NuGet packages. But go ahead.
And so it seems like this is a logical extension of what
Yes. Again, that's a great question. What we do is that every time we publish one of these libraries, we make it very, very clear which of these profiles it supports, right? So some libraries, and I can't unfortunately remember the top of my head, some libraries, we say it's only supported for that profile and that profile, but not the other profile. So it's very kind of library dependent or specific. The one thing I also want to come back really quickly is I would say ASP.NET is perhaps a poster child of how I think about the problem. If you got ASP.NET, they've done a phenomenal job, right? Really keeping up with the times, keeping up with the new innovations, and then producing new libraries and functionality on a regular basis, right? I don't see why essentially .NET, to some extent, couldn't follow a similar model in certain areas, right? Libraries being a great example where if you want, I don't know, the greatest, latest way to interact with the cloud, right? In my opinion, with the times changing so fast, you should not have to wait 3, 4, 5 years to get that new library or functionality. Question?
So if we opted to download some libraries from Nuget as part of the framework, presumably they're redistributable, they have to be shipped with our app?
Exactly. So the question was around the redistribution of Nuget packages, and since it's a proper, fully supported Microsoft channel, it's 100% supported. So you distribute it with the application, and we'll support it. Question?
Do you intend to support MEF on Windows Phone?
Do we intend to support MEF on Windows Phone? I'm going to have to find out. The nice thing is, this is the beautiful answer that I can tell you right now. If we decide to support it, I have to find out. You don't have to wait for 3 years. I mean, that's the honest truth now, right? Previously, I'd say, let me go and think about it. Oh, wait, yes, we decided. We'll see in 3 years, right? Now it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to do it. And by the way, it's going to be here in 2 months, right? And that's exactly what I mentioned about the real-time feedback channel. Like, we literally, like, look at that every single day. What do people want in libraries? And once we get enough requests, it's like, okay, we need to go and do that as well. I have to tell you, as someone working on the .NET team, I'm so excited about the fact that I can actually interact with you guys on a real-time basis as opposed to, you know, it's like, oh, we're starting .NET version foobar. See you in 3 years. Now, here's the latest version. Hope you like it and drop it on you, so to speak, right? I'm excited personally. I don't know about you guys. Question?
This .NET technology guide is amazing.
Okay. Okay, I would, I'm going to give you, if you don't mind my card, I really want to, like, dig deep into what you exactly mean.
I had an hour-long conversation about this last night, and I didn't know it exists, and now it does.
Okay, great, wonderful. I appreciate the feedback. I'm going to give you my card. I really would like to understand what you mean by interactive, because we might go and do something and then come back to you, and you say, this is not what I actually wanted, right? But, so... I'm just going to grab my card really, really quickly so I don't forget. Any other questions? Yes, please.
Yeah, you might already mention this, but is there a way for a new user to see that things are updated? So if I get a 4x5 library and something's innovated on it, I haven't shipped yet, somehow something tells me, hey, do I have to get a new version?
Oh, notifications, for example. So let me... So I will have to see whether there is push notifications. I don't know about push notifications, but for sure, as soon as you go to that dialogue and you go to the updates, there's actually an update section. It scans your solution and then says, here are all the updates. Would you like to opt in and download them? But I do not know about a push model. I'm going to have to find that out.
But I do have to go into the
manager dialogue, right? That's... what I know of 100%, I do not know about push notifications, but I can go and find out. Question?
How does the development application
work with the Windows runtime? Yes, sure. So the question was, how does the .NET applications work with the Windows runtime? And so I'm going to rewind for about 9 months ago when we released .NET 4.5. .NET 4.5 has... great support for Windows runtime. If you were in my talk yesterday, we've added some additional capabilities, such as nullable value types in struct and so forth, but we have essentially 100% support for Windows Runtime. And the fact, I'm going to go to the extent of saying, you know, the Windows Store application that I wrote with the GNU and Kinect, that is all written in C# and interacts with Windows Runtime to show those capabilities. So it's a fully supported. We spend, I would say, all of our time in 4.5 making sure that we have great support for Windows Runtime in .NET. Ah, so the question was, does it support a low-end hardware? So I'm going to state something very obvious. Windows Runtime is, as you know, available on Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. And this is where it's really important to kind of bring back the discussion about portable class libraries. Platform-specific functionality, in this case, Windows Runtime, for example, which is not available on, I don't know, Windows 7, for example, right? In your actual portable class library, there needs to be an abstraction that says, you know, on Windows 8, which has Windows Runtime, I do X, for example, but on Windows 7, for example, I do Y. The Windows Runtime is a platform-specific functionality, and therefore you have to think about that as you are developing your application. So if it needs to run on both Windows 7, where Windows Runtime isn't available, the portable class library needs to abstract that so that it works on both platforms. Yes?
So is it the idea that what starts today as libraries and NuGet will be included, at least some of them, in future versions of the .NET framework?
I think that's a very distinct possibility, yes. I would say the model that we're thinking right now is, you know, like ASP. I think Scott Hanselman did a talk on, like, what's new in ASP.NET, for example. As we are releasing these libraries, obviously they're 100% supported as we are producing them. But I don't know the exact plans, but I could certainly see a future where, you know, kind of like a TikTok count, right? Like once in a while we'll say, here are all the packages. We're going to kind of bring them together and release as one per se, right? But still continue to evolve those as we go forward as well. We've actually heard that feedback a number of times is that, you know, we love the fact that you're doing the much faster innovation in the libraries, but once in a while I'd like to see whether you guys are going to, you know, release a version of .NET.
Framework. Yeah, sort of follow up. So say like on .NET, at some point I don't want to keep having to carry and maintain like a dozen like UGL libraries.
I understand. Absolutely, yes. I've received that feedback several times. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time. You've been a wonderful audience, and have a great rest of Build 2013. Please don't forget to fill out the evaluations. I should have mentioned that, but it slipped my mind.